From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Now let's join our host, Jim Williams, on ABQ Connect.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. The words of my engineer, Steve Ryman, always echo in my head. He says, Jim, smile on the radio. And sometimes that's not so easy, especially on a Friday afternoon. So I do want to thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. And a guy that is always smiling, Steve McKee, joins me in studio. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Jim. Not always smiling. But on a day like today, I'm smiling.
Every day I've known you, you have smiled.
That's
and you've gone out of your way to encourage me in many, many ways over the years, and I always appreciate that about you.
Likewise.
Thank you. Let me tell our listeners about you. Steve is a co-founder of McKee Wallwork and Company. His partner is done a great job, and you've had quite an advertising agency. He's written two books, When Growth Stalls, How It Happens, and When You're Stuck and What to Do About It, and Power Branding, Leveraging the Success of the World's Best Brands. Soon to release a third book called Turns. Tell us about that book, Steve.
Yeah, Turns. It's how to know which way to go. And the idea is, if you look at turns in the physical world, like cars turning or pivoting on your foot or the earth turning around the sun, there are principles there that serve as wonderful metaphors for turns in the rest of the world. So turns in war, turns in politics, turns in the economy.
Pivoting in basketball.
Pivoting in basketball, flip turns in swimming. Turns in business, and there's these wonderful lessons. There's eight lessons of the turn that you can carry throughout and across all of them. And I had a blast researching the book. I'm not a physicist or a scientist. Didn't do so well in high school and that stuff, but I can read. So I got a lot of information on all the forces involved in the turns and the dynamics and all those. I interviewed the nation's foremost experts on roadway curves. Believe it or not, there is such a guy.
Wow.
He was a hoot. And it's just, I think it's going to be a fascinating read, and it'll help. The subhead is how to know which way to go. And the idea is when you're confronted with a turn or facing a turn, sometimes we don't know what to do. So this hopefully will provide some good advice for that.
Yeah, I love that. Steve, I'm looking forward to that. And your other books are worth a good read. I have not gone through Power Branding as closely as I did When Growth Stalls. Enjoyed that one a lot. And there's a lot of personal application. In addition to a business person, a business person should absolutely read those books. Steve, your expertise, I think since you graduated from college, was you wanted to teach people how to market themselves. You wanted to project an image and a professionalism, and you understand advertising and all of that. And you understand New Mexico in the global economy, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. Not just we want this to be a nice place to live, and you have as experienced as I do. Your kids have moved out of New Mexico.
3/4 of them.
Yeah. And I have 3 of my 5 still here, but one of them just itching to move as soon as, actually 2 of the 3 girls ready to leave here as soon as they possibly can. So let's start here. Steve, on this show, you said the people get the government we deserve. Is this especially true in a republic like America?
It is especially true in a republic like America. And the reason I say that, I actually find that statement in some ways encouraging, because instead of just sitting back and complaining, it really is up to us. We get the government we deserve. So we're a democratic republic, which, you know, out there in the wind these days, you hear a lot of people talking about our democracy. Every time I hear that word, it rubs me the wrong way, because pure democracies always end in tyranny. Mm-hmm. It's the tyranny of the majority.
Yeah.
We're a democratic republic, meaning we elect people to represent us. We have a Bill of Rights that protects the minority rights. But the idea is we can't talk about the government as some sort of disembodied entity out there. The government is us. I mean, we elect people for 2 or 4 or 6 year terms to go and represent us. Then ostensibly they come back into the pile and other people go. Of course, some people get reelected and that sort of thing. But the government is us. We are the government. And so if we are unhappy with our government, we should point the finger at ourselves.
So let's take that a step further. Do you think Americans and New Mexicans have the idea that we're going to hire or we're going to vote for someone to solve all of our problems, and we don't have to do anything after we vote.
I think that's an increasing problem. And I see it coming from sort of two sources. There's the so the progressive movement, which started with really Woodrow Wilson in the early 20th century, President Wilson, who believed that the Constitution was outdated and outmoded and was an anachronism for an earlier time, and believed basically in government by experts. So the Wilson administration, the whole idea behind progressivism was, we live in a scientific world now, we can hire experts, the government, and they'll know how to run things. That's the American progressive version of it. There's another version of it that's the Marxist, Leninist, socialist, communist version of it, which is different but similar in that the government, the power should be invested in the government, property should be owned by the government, and we'll take care of things. You know, we'll make sure that everybody's okay. So there is a movement more than 100 years old from the left that says, yes, in fact, hire the government. We are your betters. We are the experts. We know what to do. But then there's also a problem sort of coming from the right or regular people, if I could put it that way, especially in a state like New Mexico. And that's because government has been so dominant here historically that it tends to just be very big in our lives. And that's a unique aspect of New Mexico, because we not only have, as everybody knows, we're a poor state. So we not only have a big population that's on government assistance. So they're basically requiring the government to help them. But even our middle and upper middle class, when you think about the national labs and the Air Force bases, so many people get their paychecks from the government that they tend to sort of, it's kind of like a fish swimming in water. They don't even really realize it. So yes, we live in a country increasingly, and in a state that I believe has a misconstrued view of what the role of government should be. And it's much to our detriment, because the more self-determination and power we give up, the less we have.
But Steve, there are people, and I'm just going to say from a Christian worldview, there are people that, I guess I should back up and say this, from a Christian worldview, our forefathers founded a government. By the way, they were not all Christians. I didn't mean to say that they were. Some were, some were not. Some of them had a spiritual perspective. Maybe you'd call them a spiritist. They just believed in a higher power. But here was the profound thing to me. They established three branches of government to protect ourselves from ourselves. They were profoundly aware of that nature of selfishness. Mm-hmm. And that seems now to... That selfishness seems to be overtaking many areas.
I mean, you put your finger on the source. The famous statement is, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. I do want to address real briefly the whole Christian thing, because I've had this debate with some people who disagree with me as to whether America is a Christian nation. I think that's a little bit of a straw man. Does the Constitution say we're a Christian nation? No. Was America birthed out of a Christian milieu, a Judeo-Christian tradition? Absolutely, without question. Were our cultural norms and our political norms and our legislative norms derivative of that worldview? Without question. And the further we get away from it, the more it's harming us. So, yes, there's two basic worldviews. That is that, I'll put it in Christian terms, man is born into sin. And needs that sin nature needs to be redeemed, of course, but then also restrained. That's the Christian worldview. Mm-hmm. And then the non-believing worldview, which really arose over the Enlightenment, the last 300 or 400 years, which is man is born into a state of nature and he's basically good and society corrupts him. And those two worldviews are at the root of all of our issues today. All of them, 100%, as to whether we need to be constrained and redeemed or whether we need to be set free. And which way you bet on that is going to determine which way we go.
And I think, and I can't remember the quote, but I think you've said that one ends in death and the other one ends in life.
Absolutely, without question, because you're betting on how things work. I mean, somebody said to me the other day, reality always wins. You know, in life, when you're making bad decisions, reality always wins. Reality is always going to win. The way the world works is the way the world works. And I've often said that... most people, I think the vast majority of people have good intentions. The left governs based on how things should be. The right governs based on how things are. And that's a big difference.
Considering where we stand nationally compared to other states, are you surprised by how New Mexico votes, how New Mexicans do at the polling place?
I am because I've seen data. I have data, lots of data. And I think we all know intuitively New Mexico is a conservative place. It is more conservative, the data shows, is more conservative than the national average. And yet it's been a blue state for a very long time. And I think I've scratched my head over that a lot. The sort of surface 30,000-foot level conclusion I've come to is that in some ways, because we're so rooted in tradition here, people's tradition includes my parents voted this way, my grandparents voted this way, my mm-hmm. great-grandparents voted this way. That's who I am. It's part of my identity. Even though the political parties have changed a lot in the last 80 years. And so those who are respective of, who value tradition, vote a certain way, and they end up voting for people who disrespect their tradition. It's a weird thing. And I think someday, and I actually think we might get into this someday soon, that's going to come to a head. And that's where my hope lies for the state.
So part of the reason I wanted to have you on is because I have a hope that New Mexico is going to change. Make some changes. Let's take advantage of this beautiful geography, this amazing weather, the natural resources that we have, the draw of tourism, and let's start managing that money well. Let's take care of the families that live here. Let's attract business. All of that.
All of it.
And to me, there's a difference. To me, the solutions are not complicated, but they're hard work.
Yes. And they're hard to get to.
Yes.
I would agree. I think the solutions are really straightforward and rather simple. Getting them implemented so far has proven impossible. Perhaps in time it won't.
Well, and let's talk about some of that detail. So again, my question was, considering where we stand nationally compared to other states, where do we go in education?
Well, education, I think we're 50th in education overall in the country, which is nowhere that you want to be.
But, Steve, I'm told we spend the highest amount of money per student in the Albuquerque public schools in the country.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the highest or not, but I know it's among the highest. It's very high. Our high school graduation rate yet is 10 points below the national average. And test scores are low and down and the whole thing. In my mind, education is just one piece of it. If you look at the rankings that we get, where we get compared to other states, because you think about it, there's 50 states, thousands of municipalities in those states, people considering a move, retirees considering a move, companies considering a move, they can't have all that information. They seek information out. And there's a number of information sources, whether it's Forbes magazine or U.S. News and World Report, which I happen to have in front of me, that ranks the states. And U.S. News recently ranked us 50th, and in education, we're ranked 50th. Crime, we're ranked 47th. Economic opportunity, we're ranked 49th. And these things, you know, I wouldn't say they cherry-pick statistics. They use the best statistics they can find. They have nothing against New Mexico. WalletHub just did a study based on 52 rankings and ranked us 50th as well. So education is one of those areas that is really a big problem that we need to fix. Another one, if you look at just the local economy in general, our job growth lags the national average. And the biggest issue, which is both a problem and a great example of the problem, is, and this was much in the news several months ago, we've had no population growth. We've had we had the census in 2020, and over the previous decade, we had a very small bump in population, and that was due to natural births. When you talk about migration, in-migration and out-migration, we are negative, which is a huge problem because our population is aging. Older people get more expensive, as we're learning, as we age.
Well, we've also talked about our children moving.
And our children are moving,
the state.
Right, they're looking for opportunity. And so you get this self-defeating cycle of perception of low economic opportunity. People leave for opportunity. It makes our economic opportunities less. U.S. News and World Report and the like report on that, and it just becomes this, you know, this terrible, terrible cycle. We have a real problem in the state. our cost of living is lower, of course, but our income is lower, our poverty rate's higher, and it's just a vicious cycle. Now, the good news is it's up to us. Nobody's, you know, we're not like living under a cloud. We're not having a hurricane every other week. We're not in Tornado Alley. We can change these things, but it's just going to take some wisdom.
Amen. Steve McKee is our guest today on ABQ Connect. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about a little bit more about opportunities and crime and other things in New Mexico. But then we're going to go back to talking about the responsibility that we have as voters. We'll be back on ABQ Connect with Steve McKee right after these messages.
Think taking classes in biblical studies can't fit your life? Here's Calvary College student Cresta.
After years of wanting training in ministry, I found Calvary College. Now I can deepen my walk with the Lord, and I can go as little or as often as my schedule allows. The classes are great, and the schedule definitely works around my work and family life.
Learn more about God and the Bible on your schedule with Calvary College. Apply today at calvarychurchcollege.com.
John Chitwood of Southern Boulevard Automotive.
I have towed many vehicles in for repair, with the customer stating the car just stalled while I was driving. After diagnosing it, I've had to make that phone call many times and state to the customer, you're out of gas and you need to refuel. Many Christians are like that. They need to be refueling daily with God's Word in order to keep themselves moving forward and to have the mind of Christ. Dwight L. Moody was once asked why he urged Christians to be filled constantly with the Holy Spirit. He replied, "I need continuous infilling because I leak." What gauge do you use in your life to know if you're running on empty of the infilling of God's Spirit?
Southern Boulevard Automotive, 2300 Southern Boulevard in Rio Rancho, 892-2300, or southernblvdautomotive.com. Thank you, John Chitwood at Southern Boulevard Automotive, for your support of KLYT 88.3 FM.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Today's show is sponsored in part by Ben Lucero at Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700. Or online at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect.
According to Denise McKee, I have the smartest man in the world in studio with me, Steve McKee.
I don't know if she would even say that.
I know she would.
I hope so.
I just love the McKee family. Steve, you've raised four kids here. You've got grandchildren going and things. I guess before we talk about crime, has your family been affected by crime at all? Or are all of us affected?
Well, we all are. And, you know, they say you think crime's not a problem until it happens to you. There is a sense that there, I think there's a sense among all of us that we're living in a more dangerous time, more dangerous place. And every time you hear about anything from a car theft to a broken window to a breaking and entering to worse, it affects us all. And it, you know, when you're looking over your shoulder,
are we spoiled because we've been here when that wasn't a thing?
I don't think we're spoiled because of it, because I think that's the way it should be. Mm-hmm. Now, Albuquerque's always had a bit of a crime problem. You know, Memphis is up there ranked among the top cities in crime. I've spent a lot of time in Memphis. It's a wonderful place. I don't feel unsafe there, just like I don't, you know, daily feel unsafe here. Yet Albuquerque's up there in, you know, in the crime statistics. The extent to which we feel like we have to be careful and look over our shoulder, it shouldn't be that way. And the extent to which we worry about our kids or our cars, we shouldn't have to.
You're an advertising guy. You're seeing all the political advertising ads, particularly from the Republican candidates for governor. In fact, they have a big debate tonight on KOAT, which I like to watch the debates. Mm-hmm. I like to hear what they have to say. But there's a whole bunch of claims, and I want people to keep this in mind because we're going to talk about it in a little bit. There's all kinds of claims from both sides. Like, for example, I'd love to see Michelle Lujan Grisham now doing these very calm, we have now gotten rid of social tax on Social Security income for almost everybody. We've done that for you. I'm paraphrasing what the commercial is. And then she smiles at the camera and I'm thinking to myself, is she going to get elected on that good thing? By that is a good thing, to get rid of Social Security tax on Social Security
income. Which Rebecca Dow did, by the way.
Okay.
It was her bill.
Yeah. But the bottom line is, she's the governor. She got it done. That's a good thing. Is everybody going to forget about the other things that are not happening well? And Steve, I can't help but go to a sports analogy. We're not going to allow the men's or women's basketball coach at the University of New Mexico to keep their job if they don't win.
No, but to continue your analogy, if they're the eighth seed because they had a lousy season, but somehow they win the tournament, they're going to keep their job. Right? If they make that run at the end.
But are you saying that a few little victories are going to be the perception in the public to be the good thing?
That's what all politicians hope for. And that's why we're called to pay attention. And the complaint you and I have talked about many times is that people don't pay attention. And if you make your voting decision based on a commercial or three, that's really unfortunate because you're never going to see anybody run a commercial that says, I'm bad. Right? So we're called to pay attention. Let me touch on this crime thing because it's one of the things that the gubernatorial candidates are all talking about. Nobody likes crime. Back to the U.S. News and World Report thing. I'm going to give you three statistics, and they don't seem to add up, but then I'll connect the dots. The national average incarceration rate is 419 people per 100,000. In New Mexico, it's only 316. That sounds good. The juvenile incarceration rate nationally is 85 people for every 100,000. In New Mexico, it's only 78. So you're saying, what's wrong with that? Violent crime rate. The national average is 379 violent crimes per 100,000 residents. In New Mexico, it's 832.
Wow.
How do those statistics align? We have more crime, and we're locking up fewer people. There's your problem. It's judicial reform that we need. It's not the cops. The cops are doing an amazing job. They're heroes. They're doing the absolute best they can. They catch the bad guys. And then the next day, the bad guys are out on the street again. We need judicial reform, which is rooted in the legislature of the state, not even the governor's office.
So all of the candidates are talking about, I'll end the catch and release. Is that real?
They intend to, and they're very sincere, and they'll use all the powers of their bully pulpit to be able to do it. But this is the drum I keep beating. The legislature is where it's at. It's the legislature, the legislature, the legislature. As long as the legislature remains virtually unchanged, this stuff isn't going to change. So, no, I believe they're all very sincere. I believe they want to do it. I believe they're going to try to do it, but they can't do it by themselves.
And again, we've got these people in place that have a losing record. One dominant party in the state of New Mexico has led us to this point. And I'm not telling people how to vote because I think there's people in every party that are qualified and are interested in representing the people and actually doing what God wants them to do. I really believe that there's those people. So what should we be asking? What questions should we be asking of candidates?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. We shouldn't take what they say at face value because they're all going to say things that are focus group tested and we need to be asking them, and this is what's especially frustrating to me in really every, but again, in this gubernatorial race. They all talk about how bad the other guy is, or the other gal in this case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people either believe that or not, or don't. But too few of them are talking about, practically speaking, given the realities on the ground, what they're going to do. And I think that's the question I would ask when I get a call from one of them is like, I hear you. I trust you. You know, you got good values. I get all that. But what are you going to do? And then if they said, I'm going to end the crime thing, I'd say, okay, time out. You can't. Or explain to me how you can. And get really specific about what are you going to do? And I think one of the things that New Mexico lacks is a vision. We've done some caretaking in the past, changed things on the margin, reduced gross receipts tax by 0.25%, you know, which is a good thing, but it's on the margin, rather than making the significant changes in education, in our tax code, in our judicial system that we need to do.
Is it too late for us to recover from some of this mismanagement?
Not at all. No, not at all. Of course not. I think about, the world is continually changing. You know how if you look at your skin on your body, it didn't exist 5 years ago, right? Your body has, the cells of your body have completely turned over in the last, I don't know how long, I'm not a biologist, but you're you, and you're the you that's never changed, but you're also very different. Same thing with the state. The world changes all the time. And again, it's entirely within our power. If you want to look at the bright side, if you're, to use your sports analogy, if you've gone, how many games are in a basketball season?
28.
If you've gone 2-26 for the last 20 years, ain't nowhere you can go but up. Right? Mm-hmm. I'd rather have that job than Duke, step into Mike Krzyzewski's shoes, right? Nowhere to go but down. So that's the good news, is we have nowhere to go but up. And small changes can make a big difference here.
I spend some time on this show talking to people like the Heritage Foundation, think tank, talking to your friend Paul Gessing at Rio Grande Foundation, and they're putting out public policy ideas that are well-researched, either political party or multiple political parties affiliates can look at those, disagree with them, tweak them, do whatever. But I see such a dichotomy. I mean, I see things happening, for example, in the Biden administration that I just simply can't understand. Like, how is it a good idea to let people across the border? Now, somebody will tell me, Steve, and this is not on our list, so I apologize, but they'll say things like, well, the Democrat Party, they just want people to vote for them, and they're going to bring these people in, and they're going to be on the welfare system, and they're going to vote for Democrats. I don't think that math adds up correctly, because there's no way we can afford to do that. Plus, you don't know who you're letting in. I mean, I read a statistic in L.A. County that over 30% of the crimes committed in L.A. County are illegal immigrants. What are we doing?
Well, for one, different people and different politicians are solving different problems. I think it's one of the things is we just assume we're all trying to solve the same problem. And I don't think that's the case. But charitably speaking, the immigration issue is one that gets just wrapped around the axle. I know very few people. I don't know if I know anybody who's against immigration. I mean, America is a nation of immigrants. It's a wonderful thing. It's the question of legal versus illegal. And people try to conflate and confuse that all the time. If you're looking at the influx of illegal aliens or undocumented immigrants, depending on what you want to call them, charitably speaking, we all know that most of those people, obviously there's going to be some terrorists and drug dealers, but most of those people want a better life. Mm-hmm. And they're coming from difficult places. And that taps our heartstrings, and we're all immigrants ultimately, and so we want to support that. I think it's a lack of wisdom or a lack of thinking about secondary consequences that comes up. And I'll tell you the secondary consequences that I worry the most about with immigration. This might sound a little pointy headed, but obviously crime is a problem, increased crime, and if they're not on the tax rolls, that's a problem. Here's what I worry about. When you become a naturalized citizen of the United States, you go to class and you have to learn about our history and heritage. And then you have to swear an oath to the country. The reason that's important is because America is the only nation, American exceptionalism. The reason America is an exceptional nation is because we're a country founded on an idea, not a bloodline or an ethnicity, but on an idea, really a set of ideals. And it's operating by those ideals which makes the country work. What concerns me about a huge influx of people who are not going through the system is they will not be aware of those ideals. You can't expect them to be. And therefore, they will not operate within and by those ideals. And therefore, the country will come apart. So the reason that we naturalize citizens by having them go through classes and swear allegiance is because we've understood historically that everybody who lives here needs to understand what this place is and what makes it go, what makes it work. And that is the ideals on which we're founded. And we're currently, we've opened up the floodgates to people who will be outside of that forever, for the rest of their lives. Families that will be outside of that for the rest of their lives. And God bless them, but they won't know what makes America exceptional. And America could become no longer exceptional.
One of the things that I have not heard, particularly from the right, is here's a plan for legal immigration that allows somebody to legally immigrate in our country in a reasonable amount of time. Because right now you're talking 5-10 years. Having a banking background, knowing that I can pull an FBI background check or a credit report in 45 seconds on anybody in the United States, I think the technology is very close to being able to do that with people around the world. And I think that we ought to be spending some money helping these other countries and doing some, you know, I talked with Mike Howell with the Heritage Foundation, and he said that we're spending 1/3 of the amount of money in Mexico and South American companies that we were at one time helping those communities and doing economic development, different things to keep people safe and make them so they're not necessarily wanting to come across the border. So, I mean, there's a lot of people out there with a lot of different plans, but we don't hear the politicians talking about those plans.
And that gets back to something we talked about before. It's because Congress is broken. Mm. Because immigration has become a political football. There are incentives for both parties not to solve it. I'm not that cynical that I believe people don't want to, but there are incentives for both parties not to solve it. And Congress has abdicated its responsibility to the executive branch. If there was a if there was a debate going on within Congress like it's supposed to, they could come to some sort of consensus and make trade-offs on all these issues and come to that place. But Congress doesn't even approve a budget anymore, right? Mm. It's abdicated its responsibility, and the growth of the executive branch or the administrative state, whatever you want to call it, puts the power in very few hands that are behind closed doors.
When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about the Christian community, largely our audience, and our responsibilities in all of this. We'll be back with Steve McKee. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. Children who are hurting and scared. Although we have lots of love to give, care also takes dollars. You can help provide a safe haven for these children by making a tax-deductible donation online at acchkids.org or by calling us at 898-5520.
Invariably in the winter, kids, and even adults, will find a frozen pond and inch out onto the ice further and further, trying to see how far they can go from shore without the ice breaking. There is something in the human psyche that likes to push the limits to see how far we can go without getting into trouble. Because of our fallen human nature, God gives us safe limits. The Ten Commandments are a good example, followed by other guidelines in Scripture. Yes, they limit us, but their purpose is to keep us safe, and we are wise if we let them do their job. This is David Jeremiah encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover God's safe limits on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com and get your roadmap for life. Route 66. Start your journey home today.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Steve McKee is the co-founder of McKee Wallwork & Company. They are an advertising agency. How long have you been doing that, Steve?
25 years, July 1st.
I love
it. Can't believe it.
Yeah, that's really neat. Congratulations on that success. Two books, When Growth Stalls, How It Happens, Why You're Stuck, and What to Do About It, and Power Branding, Leveraging the Success of the World's Best Brands. And he's soon to release a third book called Turns, How to Know Which Way to Go. I love it.
That's kind of fitting for today's conversation.
It really is. It really is. Now I'm going to ask you to get on the case of our listeners a little bit. Is the Christian community participating at any higher level as voters than non-Christians?
My understanding is that we're actually not. So knowing I was coming over today, I looked up the statistic we had in New Mexico in the 2020 election, which was pretty high. Actually, it was the highest voter participation ever. Only 61% of eligible voters voted. So think about that. Only 6 in 10 of eligible voters voted. And in the Christian world, I suspect that it was less than that. I suspect that it was lower than that. It's frustrating. It's frustrating to anybody who believes in Jesus, who cares about politics, because there's some just so much untapped there.
But again, Steve, you've already made the statement, politics is not separate from us.
Right.
It's not something we can choose to participate. We are participating.
We are. I believe we have an obligation to do it. I think there is some sense in the Christian community of, at one level, there's some disgust with it, so they just drop out. There are some who would believe that it's somehow beneath them, or somehow it's the temporal versus the eternal and everything else. I go back simply to the greatest commandment. Right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. That's your relationship with God. And love your neighbor as yourself. That's your relationship with man. And politics is the method by, is a method by which we love our neighbors as ourselves, because we want to live in a just and fair world. And the way that in America, the wonderful blessing we've been given in a democratic republic is to engage in the political process. I think we're obliged to do it at a minimum by voting, and then by doing more than that if you care to.
We have got a caller coming in, and her name is Addie. Addie, you've got Steve McKee. Hattie, I'm sorry, Hattie. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good.
And you know, when you listen to the radio and you hear about the Democrats this, Republicans this, and all that, I would like to see all of us, everybody, pray for our country, because the Bible says, if them who called by my name will pray, seek my face and pray, then I will have mercy on their land and heal their land. So I would like to see everybody pray for our country. And instead of being right and left, we need to be one. The whole thing about all of this is God was taken out of our schools and God was taken out of everything. And I would like to see, you know, prayer being, kids being able to have prayer studies and that. When I went to school, we are able to do that.
Yes.
We weren't forced to do that, but we are able to do that.
Patty, you may not be aware of this, but there are a lot of organizations that are literally constantly praying for our leadership. And we on this show, I always tell people, even if you disagree with the governor, for example, please be praying for her and constantly doing that. So I appreciate you listening very much, and it's encouraging to us that you called today. Thank you.
It's a good reminder. I was reading Nehemiah this morning. He was recounting the Israelites, you know, trials and tribulations. And repeatedly, this is chapter 11 of Nehemiah, he says, our fathers acted arrogantly. We would not listen. We refused to listen. And then things went badly. Then he says, they cried to you. You heard from heaven and things turned around. And we know that throughout the pages of the Old Testament, right? Fall away from God, return to God. He blesses you. So I think Patty's cutting to the chase, is we do need to be prayerful, but that prayerfulness then needs to express itself in some sort of action. I think it is a really good reminder for us to try and stay away from the ruts of right and left and Democrat and Republican and those deeply grooved ruts that can get us all off track, and stick to the issues that are very important based on the principles in the scripture. I do find it interesting that it's fashionable today to say that God is not a member of this party or that. Of course he's not. But it's also true that this party and that hew more closely to the word of God than others.
Yes.
And so I think that's a little bit of a straw man argument too. Let's set that aside. Pray. Let's look at our biblical principles, how those should be applied in our politics. Room for disagreement, loving disagreement, but that doesn't justify us allowing people who do not subscribe to that to just have free reign.
Patty, thank you so much for calling us today. We appreciate you listening. Steve, I want to go, maybe people are listening right now that don't hold a belief in Christ.
Mm.
And they may be thinking, well, I don't want to elect anybody that's a Christian because they disagree with me. They may even, we may talk about the LGBTQ community. They may say, oh, well, they don't agree with us and how we want to live our lives. But I want to point out something that I think is a biblical mandate. And I think this goes all the way back to our forefathers. People that are Christians particularly are maybe going to disagree with you, but they're going to protect you. Mm-hmm. And your ability to live the life that you want to live.
There's
and,
a reason why in hardcore Muslim countries, LGBTQ people, for example, are killed. There's a wonderful statement about Christianity, which I've found just, I don't know who said it first, but I think it's wonderful. And that is this, my religion won't allow me to force you into my religion.
I love that.
Yes. And so we're called to be a just people to, if you go to the great political thinkers all the way back to St. Augustine, if you want to, and then, through Edmund Burke and all the wonderful people who have thought a lot about this, what's fascinating is, morality is actually second to liberty. And let me explain that for a minute. If you think about, there are four factors, if you want to think about it. Liberty, morality, security, and prosperity. What order do those come in? And there's some debate. It's either liberty, morality, security, prosperity, or morality, liberty, security, prosperity. So the idea is, let's go with the second one first. If you're in a moral, if you live in a moral environment, people can have liberty. If people have liberty in that moral environment, you will have security, and then you can do things that create prosperity, those sorts of things. I happen to believe, and I think I could support this scripturally, that liberty actually comes before morality, because God said to Adam and Eve, he gave them a choice. Mm-hmm. Gave them a choice. I'm not saying that liberty is more important than morality, but we are to choose whether or not we subscribe to morality. Then when we do, we are to legislate and create an environment in which people are safe, like you were talking about.
Yes.
And in that environment, we can all thrive and prosper together. And that is the Judeo-Christian milieu, if I can use that term again, in which this wonderful country of America was born. And that's what we are slowly and unintentionally, I believe, dismantling.
So, Steve, I'm going to go to an advertising question now, a marketing question. You're standing outside in New Mexico. What's the New Mexico brand? I fear it's Breaking Bad.
Well, some people like that because they love Breaking Bad and they want to come do the tour. I've met a lot of them. The New Mexico brand, from a tourism perspective, is awesome and amazing and world-class. And everybody I meet outside the state, when you say New Mexico, they're like, either they've been here and they think it's magnificent or they want to come. So it's a wonderful brand. From a business perspective, as we were talking earlier, it is not so good. It's either not on anybody's radar, which is probably true in most of the cases because it's just not on people's radar. Like, what's Iowa like? You know, I don't know. Or people who have something to say, but they know that there's just not much here. And that, again, that's the good news is we can change that.
Negative population growth among many things that are
crime,
not
negative
business.
Population growth, small GDP. You know, then there's the water, we're doing better on water than people realize, but they think of it as a desert and that sort of thing.
You said these words on this show. The words chosen by the political class are extremely intentional. We don't even realize we're not listening.
That's right.
Explain that.
Well, democracy versus republic is a great example. Again, I challenge people. Whenever you hear the word our democracy, and you'll hear it today if you watch the news, I guarantee it. Put your antenna up. What are they trying to say? They're implying that the will of the majority should rule, which in many cases it should, but in many cases it shouldn't, because we need to protect the interests of the minority as well. So what politicians tend to, let me not slam politicians, this is just true of us in general. We use a lot of words and everybody assumes that they're interpreting the word the way it's meant, and it's just not the case. In marriage, right? One spouse can say something that the other spouse interprets differently, mm-hmm. and now you just ruined your weekend.
And you're on the couch.
And you're on the couch, right. And that's two loving people who know each other very well. It's so easy to confuse and conflate things, and that's going to happen naturally. I think in some politicians' case, they take advantage of that as well. Like if I talk about social justice, and this is one of my bugaboos, because social justice – by definition is unjust. Mm. Let's leave that there for now. But who's against justice? Right? Nobody's against justice. I mean, really, nobody's against justice. But when what somebody means when they use the word justice, that can mean a whole lot of different things. And we need to get to the root of that. That's the problem. So
But language is something advertisers use. Mm-hmm. And you even try to change the meaning of words sometimes as an advertiser.
People do. I mean, it's the nature of humanity to try and do that. This is one of my frustrations about what's going on these days, though, is language is by definition communal. It belongs to us, not me, not you. You don't have your own pronouns, and neither do I. You can't, because it's our language. And if you read a newspaper story about an individual and they're described as a them, it's very confusing. And I've seen a few of these lately. And so languages evolve naturally over time. There's no question that they do. But it's when we either force the evolution or take advantage of the meaning of a word by spinning it. That's when we're getting into a troubled area.
Steve McKee with us on ABQ Connect this afternoon. We'll have one more segment with Steve. I hope you'll stay with us. We're going to talk about our candidates for governor and whether or not they can actually do what they say they want to do. We'll be back after these messages.
I'm Jonathan McKee, and you're listening to Plugged In.
Mr. Barber is a producer and director.
He wants to make a film at Downton.
The new movie Downton Abbey, A New Era, now in theaters, invites fans of this popular series back to the British estate where it all started. From a distance, that beloved mansion is as stately as ever. Up close, well, the old dame is showing her age. While Lady Mary hatches a plan to pay for repairs, rumors swirl that the family matriarch might have a terrible secret in her past. As always with this popular franchise, strong relationships drive the story. A bit of suggestive innuendo, including same-gender attraction, turns up too, as well as some mild language. So we're giving Downton Abbey, A New Era, a 3 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. I'm Jonathan McKee for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
Hi, this is Jim Williams. Mission New Mexico Spotlight Ministry for May is across nations, equipping Native America to exalt Jesus, encounter His goodness, and extend His kingdom. Here's Across Nations General Director Chuck Harper.
We used to be called the Navajo Bible School and Mission. Then it was Western Indian Ministries. Today we're called Across Nations. We really believe that the Navajo Church should be really at the forefront of sending people to other countries. We've seen so many open doors for the gospel to go to other countries with Navajo people taking the lead. The Navajo Church won't become a strong church until it becomes a sending church.
Across Nations efforts include jail ministry, addiction recovery, Awana groups, workshops, youth outreach, and more. Find information and show your support at acrossnations.cc. That's acrossnations.cc.
This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Steve, each one of the candidates for governor on the Republican side are saying they're going to get rid of catch and release. Can the governor's office actually do that?
Not by themselves, no. They need the legislature. There's probably some, I mean, I'm not an expert. There's probably some things on the margin they can do. They certainly have a bully pulpit and the extent to which they use that, but.
So, and on the side there, I want to have you consider what sanctuary city mean. I keep hearing Albuquerque is that. And again, I don't know if the governor's office can influence that at all.
Not really. A sanctuary city, you know, a sanctuary city is basically, goes back to 2018 where Mayor Keller, he signed a resolution that the city council put out that basically prohibits city resources from being used to enforce federal immigration laws. So it's basically saying that we're not going to allow the feds, we're not going to cooperate with the feds on immigration issues. There's sanctuary states, California's a sanctuary state. That gets back to the immigration issue. That is, in many respects, the mayor and city council's prerogative in Albuquerque. The governor could have something to say about that. I don't know that they would.
All the governor candidates are saying they can close the border. Can they do that?
There's some question about that. I don't think so. Governor Abbott in Texas is very active in that arena. The governor of a state, my understanding is the governor of a state cannot close a federal crossing. Fine. I don't think really the problems are at the official crossings, right? It's between the crossings. I think there's a lot a governor can do to beef up law enforcement on the border and tamp down illegal immigration. So I do think there's a lot a governor can do. They can't officially close the border, but I think there's a lot they could
do. I loved your perspective in our prior segment where you talked about why immigration is so dangerous, that you're bringing in a whole bunch of people that are not naturalized citizens. They've not been taught.
And are not going to be.
Yeah, and they've not been taught anything about America. They don't understand how we are to live together in diversity.
Correct. And by definition of coming across illegally, they're going to live in the shadows in some respects. And so they won't have the chance to become naturalized. And the greater that population, this is especially happening in California right now, where it's a huge problem. You have a citizenry that isn't a citizenry because they're not citizens, who doesn't, I wouldn't even say doesn't subscribe to American principles. They don't even know them. So how could we expect them? That's why we have, used to have, civics classes in our grade schools to teach our kids. Now, if you're born here, you learn in a lot of other ways about the American idea. If you come in and live in the shadows, you're not gonna learn it. And when that's millions and millions of people, that's gonna create increasing problems.
The governor of Florida, governor of South Dakota, both made statements at the end, toward the end of COVID. I guess there's really no end to COVID, but now no mask mandates. But they both said, we trusted our citizens. But during COVID, when they removed mask mandates or never had them in the first place, they were being heavily criticized. But their numbers, mm-hmm. death rates, infection rates, and everything else have outperformed in Mexico. And we had some of the most restrictive laws in place that our governor exercised with her emergency powers.
This gets to kind of my biggest frustration these days is, and since I'm a branding guy, if I can put it in branding terms, we have a brand. There's a professor at Notre Dame that said a brand is something that eliminates the need for asking questions, basically. That when you have a trusted brand, so the example I like to give is if you go to the store looking for soup and you see Campbell's on the counter, there's a lot of questions you don't need to ask. There's a lot of trust there. And there were brands like the Nobel Awards, which have really hurt their own reputation, or the Pulitzer Prizes, which gave a Pulitzer Prize to the 1619 Project, which was historical nonsense, or the CDC and the WHO. Now, 3 years ago, just 3 years ago, if the CDC would have said something, we all probably would have complied because there's a high level of trust in the Centers for Disease Control. Today, I dare say there's no trust in the CDC. It's all over the board. And you can apply that to the NBA, to the NFL, to the Oscars. So our institutional brands, if you will, have so compromised themselves that we no longer trust them. And as a result, we're living in the Wild West and nobody knows what to believe. You can read an article about vaccines this way or that way. And it's like, well, that's pretty convincing, but is it true? I don't know. Watch this TV channel. You get one story. Watch this one, get another. Same with the newspapers. So we're kind of left on our own because the institutions have violated, in short-term interest of achieving whatever goals they wanted, they violated our trust.
I'm hoping people listening would be at least encouraged to vote in the primary, which is the first week of June. And actually,
early voting starts tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Well, I think it's going.
Well, you can go to the county clerk's office.
Okay,
but they
anywhere
have,
tomorrow.
Yeah, anywhere tomorrow. So how should we prepare, Steve? In light of there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of contrary messaging, there's lies, there's truth, there's who knows. What exercise should we go through now to prepare to vote?
It's so easy. It's so easy. First of all, you can Google, find my legislative district. You can Google that. You'll get a link. You can enter your address and it'll tell you what district, because you may not know your House and Senate district. That's like a 10-second assignment. Every candidate wants your vote. Every candidate has a website. Every candidate has their bio on the website. They have their issues list and everything. Go to the gubernatorial candidates. Go to the Secretary of State candidates. Go, and this is most important, go to your House, your New Mexico House candidates. Look at their websites. They're there. Parse them, right, because they're going to say a bunch of silly stuff. Parse them, and then I would encourage people to, if it's not obvious who you should vote for, reach out to the campaigns. I got to tell you, I've met so many of these state legislators. They would love to have a cup of coffee with you. They would love to. Even the ones that disagree with them, they want that connection with their constituency. So, I mean, the primary is coming up soon. Obviously, they're campaigning. They're very busy. But I guarantee you they'll meet with you. I guarantee you they'll meet with you if you want to meet with them. And then between the primary and the general, I did this. I took a legislative candidate who is now serving in a higher office out to coffee because I just wanted to understand what this person was about. We had a lovely conversation. We disagreed on almost everything, but it was good. It was nice. And what it enabled was enabled me to contact this person now in the future and they'll know who I am. So it's really easy. You can spend 5-10 minutes online. That's all you need. Or you can go deeper than that. It's right at our fingertips.
So you've already answered the question. Does communication with our representatives in the legislature and the governor's office have positive effect?
No question. No, I mean, we tend to think about when the abortion bill's on the floor, the assisted suicide, and all the emails come in, and that stuff works. Believe me, it works, and it's really important to do when you get the all call and you send the email. I think what's more effective long-term is give them a call, take them out to coffee, have a chat.
This sounds maybe oversimplified, but how should we communicate? Should we complain? Should we be concerned? Should we present alternatives?
Yes.
I guess I'm thinking about Patty right now, and she's saying we should pray.
We should pray. I would also encourage Patty to find out who her legislative candidates are and to talk with them and to get a sense to better inform her prayers, to better inform our prayers. Any kind of outreach works. Complaint works in an emergency when you have to do it. It's not the most effective thing. Don't not do it. But much better is to get to know them or have a conversation when there's nothing on the line and you can have a human conversation. And you can see each other as human beings, form a relationship then that when there is an issue, you can talk. Most people won't want to do this, but I think if we all did, it would change things a lot.
I want to get back to an issue I know is important to you, and that's education. What's a starting point for improving education in New Mexico?
The money should follow the student, not the school. It's just that simple. Right now, schools are allocated X number of dollars per student. That's where the trouble begins. If those dollars were allocated to the student and the parents then could direct them to the school of their choice, education savings accounts, and many statewide school reform efforts sort of following this model, it changes everything. It's a game of this gets into the who wants to solve what. The teachers' unions are in control of our education system because it's follow the money. If the money went to the student, the families of the student, was directed by those people rather than by the teachers' unions, everything would change.
What is your hope for New Mexico?
Okay, this is going to sound crazy. I actually think this might be a whole other topic of conversation. We know that Roe versus Wade, rumor is that the Supreme Court's going to overturn it. I hope it happens. That's going to change everything because now abortion law will revert to the states. And in the past, when abortion has been discussed in New Mexico, there has been a sense of, well, it doesn't really matter because of the federal law. When that's gone, people are going to increasingly realize how awful and murderous the abortion laws are in New Mexico. And when you then compare them to Texas and Oklahoma, probably Arizona, and you're going to see New Mexico become a net importer of abortions, it already is. But you'll be able to see our state in relief against other states. And I think it's going to wake up people here like they've never been awakened before. And they're going to say, wait, what? The conservative, you know, New Mexico population is going to say, I'm not sure we want to be the abortion capital of America. And there, that's going to open up opportunity for people who want to change that to run for office. And those people tend to also share principles about school choice and tax reform and those sorts of things. And so in a weird sort of a way, I believe that this overturning of Roe versus Wade, if it happens, could be the camel's nose under the tent of changing New Mexico entirely.
Steve McKee, I am always blessed to talk to you, my friend, and I hope your grandchildren are great, your children are great, and it's great to get to see you, and I haven't talked to you for a year.
Ugh.
Good to see you, brother.
Great to be here.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT,
The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.